Samaritan. Luke 10. It's about kindness. Just kindness. So I thought I'd follow up Sukena with an SSS, Simple Summer Sermon. Simple Summer Sermons are the ones that I usually remember the best. So let's look at Luke 10, starting in verse 25. And behold, a lawyer, those lawyers, eh? Behold, a lawyer stood up. Now, it's okay to judge them, the lawyers, okay? Strike that from, no, they're people too, believe it or not. And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test. Now, him is Jesus, of course, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Now he'd been listening to Jesus because that's what Jesus says. You know, the law is wrapped up in those two. So he's doing a pretty good job, this guy. And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man is going down to Jerusalem, from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road and saw him, and he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite..." So a priest is one that offers the sacrifice, and a Levite is one that takes care of the temple area. He takes care of all of the holy things around the temple. So they're not the same thing. So likewise, a Levite who came to the place saw him and passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him, bound up his wounds, poured on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, "Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back." Which of these three do you think proved to be the neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And the lawyer said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise." This is a particularly, in the last couple of years, this has become an interesting study for me as I have gone through this time. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. But we, in our day, come across slurs and hateful language, bullies, push people around in playgrounds, at schools, even at work, or on the internet. You know, we come across this stuff all the time. They have a name for people that do bullying on the internet. They're trolls, you know. That's a good name, I think, but... because people think that they can get away with being nasty because nobody will see who I am. But it's all this stuff that is out there. And how do we fight against that? How do we come against that spirit that's in the air? Because there used to be a place where we could have dialogue about ideas. And you would listen to somebody, and even if you weren't convinced by their argument, you would go away thinking, "Well, we had a good conversation about it. That was good, you know." But now, as soon as you argue with somebody about something, and by argument I don't mean yelling, I mean having an an opinion other than what they express. Then you talk, you are having presenting an argument, your argument versus their argument. And now if you are in an argument with someone, they think you hate them. And you're treated as a hater. And you know, we've lost something as a civilization in all of that. And so one thing we've learned here over the years, is it working okay, Stan? I need to eat it? Okay. I'm sticking out here. Okay, I thought I had it in place. Is that better? Can you see it? I didn't move it, Stan, honest. It has a mind of its own.
Wow. Yeah.
Stay there. Okay. I will decree a thing. Okay. Is that working better? Okay. One thing we've learned here over the years, now we had a school of supernatural ministry for years, and through that we understood the way to change an atmosphere, any atmosphere, because we are all atmosphere changers, because we carry the presence of the Almighty God within us. The way you change an atmosphere is to move in the opposite spirit, right? Move in the opposite spirit. And so if you're living in a poverty-filled area, you move in a spirit of generosity, because poverty is about holding, and generosity is about expanding your borders and giving, right? That kind of thing. And that's a whole teaching on its own. But today, I want to talk about how to move against that thing that is moving in our society that wants us to hate each other, wants us to really not accept one another as a human being. And the way to do that, I think, is through kindness, to move in kindness. I read a story about a guy from North Carolina. His name was Steve Petro. And he was waiting in this long lineup at a bakery shop. Because the bakery shop had these scones that were just incredible. Scone, whatever you want. and they were worth waiting for. And so he's watching all of these people pick out their scones. And he gets up to the counter finally. And there is but one scone left. And he says, "I'll take that." And the guy behind him yells, "No, that's mine!" And so this Stephen turns to him and was about to say, "No, I've been waiting in line for 20 minutes. That's mine." He turns to him and finds himself saying, "Would you like to share it with me?" Which undoes the anger in the guy because he'd lost his scone. Can you imagine losing a scone after 20 minutes? I mean, I'd be furious. I mean, a fist fight or something, you know? I take my food seriously. That's enough. Yeah. So the guy answers to Stephen, "Well, how about I buy another pastry and we share?" Now, that allowed him to retain his dignity and move in kindness as well. And so they found themselves outside on a bench together sharing pastries. Two people that had never met each other, knew nothing about each other. They were different age groups, different ethnic backgrounds. There was nothing in common except the pastries. And kindness. They both moved in kindness. And that story just is so simple, but you okay? Oh, yeah, it's leaking up there somewhere. Yeah, when it rains, especially if the heat has been on
it all comes down. So don't crawl up there, okay? Okay. Thank you.
So, kindness to strangers. That's what Sukena was talking about. Now, a stranger can come into church or be on your way as you go through your day. You can come across people anytime. And there's lots of ways to make them feel uncomfortable. And we get very good at that. You know, folded arms and looking away from them. If they come into church and they're sitting somewhere, or they sit beside you and you move. Like, you didn't have to say, I didn't say anything. Well, you sure did. not befriending them, not saying, hi, how are you? Welcome. Anything you need? Your bathrooms are right back there. You know, that kind of stuff. Because everybody needs a bathroom, right? And just befriending people. So we look at what this story in Luke's gospel. It begins with a lawyer who stands up to test Jesus. Now, lawyers have always been this way, even in the Bible. They're well-educated. They're thinkers. They can spot an opportunity to undo an argument very quickly. Jesus lived in a time when you could argue and still love each other. But this lawyer is going to test Jesus. And so he goes up to him and he says, teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? In verse 25. Now, there's no indication in the word that he is a bully or that he has issues in any way other than he's a lawyer. And he's going to test this thing. But he wants the upper hand. So Jesus responds, what is written in the law? Very beautiful test back. So the lawyer quotes from Deuteronomy and Leviticus, pointing to the commandments of to love the Lord and to love your neighbor. And it's what Jesus had already been teaching about as well. You've given the right answer, Jesus says to him. But the lawyer senses at that point, I think, that he's losing the advantage. And so he's wanting to kind of get on top of it again and to test Jesus. And so he wants to define Jesus' words. And that's always a good idea, I think. Anytime you're in an argument, just what does that word mean to you? And so he says, who is my neighbor? Who is the neighbor in this situation? So instead of Jesus reaching for his Webster's dictionary, he tells him a story. He tells him this story about the man going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. And he fell at the hands of the robbers, and he's bleeding and dying on the side of the road. We used to sing a song, you know, about bleeding and dying on the Jericho road. It's about this parable, this story. And so, the religious guys, the guys who know, the guys who are Jews. Now, this lawyer is a Jew. So the guys that he would expect to be his neighbors passed by. And essentially they said, be warm and well fed, brother. We'll be praying for you. And passed by, busy about their own business. Didn't stop. And along comes a Samaritan. Now, Samaritan doesn't mean a lot to us, but it would have to them at that day. You remember the story of the Samaritan woman at the well?
and how they were amazed that Jesus would talk to a woman, first of all, and secondly, to a Samaritan woman. Because it was, what do they say in the German, verboten? You were forbidden from talking to Samaritans. They were rebels. They were seen as outcasts. Now, we talked a little bit about it last week, but when the nation of Israel became two nations, the nation of Judah and the nation of Israel, the nation of Judah still had Jerusalem, and that's, of course, the proper place to worship, right? But Israel had, in an area called of Samaria, they had Bethel. Bethel was the place to worship. And so that was seen as a usurping of God's direct commandments to only worship where the temple was, to only worship in Jerusalem. And so they're bad guys for doing that. But not only that, they were of mixed blood. They were a people who had mixed together with the tribes of the area. And so they weren't pure Jewish. They still worshiped the Jewish God, Yahweh, but they weren't pure Jewish. So the Orthodox Jews would look at them as rebellious, inferior, foreign people that you do not ever communicate with. You do not touch them or you're unclean. You do not talk to them or you're defiling yourself. You just have nothing to do with them. There was a fear of talking to a Samaritan person. And yet, in this story, this lawyer would have been challenged with this understanding that one of them came to help the man who was bleeding and dying on the Jericho road. How could that be? And when Jesus came to him and said, "Which of these three is your neighbor?" And he said, "The one who showed mercy." He couldn't even bring himself to say, "The Samaritan." And such a beautiful picture. It's a beautiful picture because it forces us to look at something. Now, I had always seen myself as wanting to be a good Samaritan. Always kind of in the place where I have something to give, where I am willing to bend my knee and bow down and help a person. It had never occurred to me that the depth of what was happening here. It was just, I thought, a Samaritan person is just a person from an area in Israel that is ministering to another person in Israel. It was same on same, white on white, sort of, you know, brown on brown, or whatever that would be in the Middle East. But I had always seen myself as one of them. But a couple of years ago, I was put into this category of the one who was bleeding and dying on the Jericho Road. Most of the people from church, like the majority, 60%, I guess, maybe more, left suddenly from church. And our budgets were made to with the amount of money that we were bringing in tithe and all that kind of stuff, and we had commitments made and all that stuff, and it put us in an incredibly perilous place, a place where we should have folded as a church, where we should no longer have existed. That's the simple truth. The people that left taking their money with them and knowing full well that that would kill us. And we were bleeding and dying. We weren't bringing in enough money for me to pay the rent, never mind anything else. And God moved miraculously. Like most of you know the stories, but and I won't replay them here, but But at that time, I was feeling very much like I was bleeding and dying on the Jericho Road. And I began to see myself in this story. Because when I would go through town, all of the church people that I had worked with would cross to the other side of the street. You see, this thing had been in the news, and I was associated with someone who had been charged with sexual involvement with a someone underage, a pedophile. And it took place in my church, they thought, and they wanted nothing to do with me. The religious community, my friends, would cross the street or pretend that I wasn't there, even if I had caught eyes with them. And I died 1,000 deaths, having given so much, I thought, to them. And a couple of things happened out of that. One day I was in the office praying, "Oh God, oh God, oh God," my typical prayer. I'm a really eloquent speaker when I come. And there was a knock at the door, and I went to the door, and it was a man in a turban, and he had a robe on, and a big beard. And I went to the door, and I said, "Can I help you?" And he said, "No, but I might be able to help you." Spoke English well. He said, "About 15 years ago, my son, who worked with me in the Gurdwara, he was charged with something, and it took us about 3 years, but we got through it. He was found not guilty, and we lived through it, and you will too." As they say, you could have blown me over with a feather, you know? I was shocked. And so I hugged him, and I understood what a Samaritan was for the very first time. Because he took the time to come out of his way. Didn't need to. I didn't share a faith with him or anything like that. But he took the time to come and see me. And then, just after that, a couple of Christian pastors that are in town came and knocked on the door too, within a week, and just said, "Whatever you need, we're here. If you need a place, we got a place." You know, like those kind of things. So there was maybe half a dozen people that, out of the hundreds that I had known and worked with, that came. And I understood how it made the guy who was hurt feel when somebody took the time to say, "Hi, do you need that bound up? Can we help you? How can we practically help you?" Now, the people that are here in this church were incredibly helpful during that time and incredibly supportive. You guys were just first class. And for all eternity, I will be grateful. But this story had a whole different complexion to it all of a sudden for me. As Jesus says, "Go and do likewise." Like, who's your neighbor? Well, it's somebody who's in need. But it's not just somebody who's in need. Because our question as Bible-believing, faithful people, and that I know you are. I'm preaching to the choir here. Our question shouldn't be, "Who is my neighbor?" but rather, "Who is a good Samaritan?" Who's a good Samaritan? A true good Samaritan is someone of a different cultural caste who helps a person outside of that ethnic circle, I think. Something that tests the very gut of who you are. How hard is it for me when Jerry has a need for me to go and help Jerry? Because we're both, let's call us middle-aged, right, Jer? Middle-aged white males. He's one of us, you know. He's one. I can get together with him. But what about somebody who I don't trust, because every time I see them on the news, they're killing white people. A Muslim, for example. Now, not all of them are that way. We heard that from Sukaina today. But there is something that goes to the depth of me that creates a distrust about somebody like that. And how on earth am I to rise up out of that except by the power of God's love moving in me? It's so much easier for me to walk by on the other side and say, "Welcome to Canada, God bless you, be warm and well fed, I'll pray for you." That becomes our attitude, right? Or it could easily become mine. I don't need to point the finger at you. It's incumbent upon us as God's people to be good people. Like to reach out to other Christians. Like we are to be like our Father. And so when it's easy, it's our responsibility to do that. But to be a good Samaritan is a whole different level of that. Like we don't get to be good Samaritans just by helping out somebody else in church. Oh, I'm a good Samaritan here. No, you're not. You're a proper Christian. That's the way you should operate all the time. It's not cut and run as soon as there's a problem. It's let's see this thing through. Let's go through this together. Christians have faith to do those things and not disappear. A good Samaritan's at a whole different level. One that tests everything in you to move into a place where you're willing to sacrifice for them. 2 denarii doesn't sound like a big deal, but it would have cost him to minister to this guy. And he was ministering to a Jew. So God's called us to be wonderful people. But he's also called us to be good Samaritans. And just like God. Do you remember when I preached about how God in his goodness, when he said he kicked Adam and Eve out of the garden, and he said, "You will earn your living from cultivating the ground." And you think, "Ooh, that's so hard," you know, because thorns and thistles and stuff was in there. But there is something that happens when you dig into the soil, the release of what's that? Yeah, a microbe. Thank you. Yeah, you were here. A microbe is released that affects you through your smell. You smell it and it clicks something in your brain and you are happier when you've been working in the garden. Now, often you don't come in with a big smile on your face, but there is a sense of well-being from having worked in the garden. And that is God in, like, he just can't help himself.
Wow.
he is good all the time. So you guys have got to leave this place and you got to get your living from the soil, but I'm going to put something in the soil that just kind of makes you feel good about it. What kind of a God is that? He's just so amazing. So what happens in kindness? When you're kind to someone and you move out of that kind of a comfort zone, psychologically, there is something that happens. And psychologists from the University of Houston are doing research on it, and they call this thing a helper's high. It actually exists. This thing where you start to feel joy when you help somebody. They're recognizing, oh, there's something to this. And so in the article that they're talking about, in their research study, they say that altruism really doesn't exist. Now, altruism is the selfless service of another for their well-being. But the selfless side is what they're dealing with here. And so altruism is doing it without reward, without concern for reward. You're just doing it because it's the right thing to do, and you do it altruistically, right? But they say that when you do it, it becomes an impure altruism because you're going to feel better, as if that's a bad thing. God has built in to us this idea, or this actual, it's a response within us that is triggered by our kindness. And there is something in it too, as they look into this thing, that is contagious. Kindness can be caught, if you can imagine. So, in 1 Corinthians, where is it in 1 Corinthians? Help me. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 8, says, God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance. Oh, what a good God. So that by always having enough of everything, you may share abundantly in every good work. In every good work. Abundantly. Share abundantly. In other words, God's generosity rubs off on you, making you more generous. And then Paul says in verse 11, I think, you will be enriched in every way for your great generosity. Is that what it says? You will be enriched in every way. You will, not only do you have something put in your bank account in heaven, or here on earth, whatever it is, because of your generosity, but in every way, you will feel better in your soul, in your body, when you are generous. Yes. There is something, you will have something come back to you. Impure altruism. Wow. Well, praise God. We can be generous and give things away. So in Scientific American, they said, kindness in itself is contagious. It can cascade across people, taking on new forms along the way. They found that people make larger charitable gifts when they believe that others are being generous. In the situation where people cannot afford to donate, one individual's kindness can inspire others to spread positivity in other ways. So you remember that story I told you about the scones? Well, the backstory to that is that a week before, this Stephen was in the very same bakery in a lineup, and the guy ahead of him paid for his coffee. And so Stephen tapped him on the shoulder when you know the barista gave him the, you know, that's been paid for, and said, why did you do that? And he said, it just makes me feel good. And so a week later, this scone incident happened, and Stephen says, do you think it had anything to do with that guy giving me the coffee the week before? Like, it's contagious. He infected somebody else because he got it. He caught kindness and he caught generosity because of the kindness of somebody else. I was in a Tim Hortons lineup, car lineup. Don't have to interact with anybody then, right? And the windows are down, and the lady two cars ahead of me sneezed, you know, a big sneeze. I mean, she wasn't holding anything. She's she's alone in the car, so she, big sneeze. And so I leaned out the window, and I said, God bless you. And I think she needed a chiropractic adjustment because, whang, her head turned around, and she looked back at me, and she said, thank you. And so she did her interaction with the person at the counter, and then I pulled up, and I'd ordered a small coffee for my bride, and I was going to bring it to her, and there was a medium-sized coffee, as she likes it, all paid for already, because the person that I'd said, God bless you to, had paid for her coffee. That gets a better clap than miracles do sometimes. it's just that way. Kindness is contagious. Kindness is something that we can all move in so easily. We are a blessed people, and it's so easy for us to move in kindness. But the challenge comes when we become tempted to be a good Samaritan. Will we take the time? Will we reach out to somebody who doesn't look like us or smell like us or come from the same background as us? Will we reach out to them in kindness? Will we be kind to them? Will we be kind to the trans fluid person who looks like a man with an unshaven beard, but he's in a dress and he wants to come and be in our congregation? Will we be kind to him, or will we reject him? That's where good Samaritanism comes from. You go and you sit by him or her. I could be sued for calling her a him. But we don't need to make them monsters in our eyes or to keep them at arm's length. They are people, and they hurt just like us. They have insecurities just like us, and they need love just like us. So our responsibility is to love them, and how we love them is between God and us. But we need to move out of the comfort zone that many of us live in and into that place.